and environmental problems. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for Disruptive Technologies and Human Design, part 4 of Startup City, how the new tech boom is changing Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock Pacific time in Portland, Oregon. This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your free, people-supported radio station, KBOO. I'm Teresa Mitchell, joining me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. The midterm elections were largely unsurprising. Nationwide, no one even campaigned to stop the U.S. evil imperial wars because it's not allowed to be an issue anymore, I guess. Our internalized imperialism, the incarceration state, the modern U.S. police state, also went unchallenged. We don't talk about that in elections. I voted knowing that our elections are utterly corrupt and largely irrelevant. But I'll grab what little power I can get. But it certainly isn't going to stop me from finding another way to express myself politically and to change things. And I really just wanted to come out and say, yeah, I voted, and I know perfectly well that ain't going to do it. We've got a huge task ahead of us. Billionaire power dominated this election, of course, simply because they have the cash to dominate the media, to make up into down. And even so, there are victories, as in Richmond, California, where a progressive slate was elected to city council. And across the country, several states and municipalities raised the minimum wage. Here in Oregon, voters fell for Monsanto's bamboozlement and lost the opportunity to label Frankenfoods. Our loss, it kind of reminded me of back when PGE wanted to shut down the Trojan nuclear power plant, but wanted us to foot the bill, so they pretended that they didn't want to shut it, conducted a campaign talking about how wonderful nuclear power was, and fooled the voters and then shut it on our dime. Isn't that just the way that goes? But Frankenfoods, well, are in just about every commercially distributed product these days. It's in your Cheerios and your Fritos and the lot. Oregon also legalized recreational marijuana, which will have some interesting effects, and not just the ones when you puff. I'm glad to see an end to the pointless dope arrests. But of course, the situation is still in flux, as most states and countries still criminalize possession and usage of this very useful and necessary drug. So it is likely, I think, that smuggling out of Oregon will actually increase, and violent people may come here to snatch what they can. And on the other hand, perhaps that will push people in other places to legalize. Wouldn't it be nice if it were legalized worldwide and had nothing to do with arrests and violence and any of that? Oregon did not provide an amnesty for victims of the drug war. It wasn't a part of the ballot issue. So thousands of people are doing time for possessing and distributing dope, still rotting in jail in Oregon. And yes, they are disproportionately Black and Latino, so I would like now to call for an amnesty movement, because legalizing it is only half of the effort. I call for an amnesty movement to address this historic and racist injustice, starting with the Task Force for Sentence Nullification in Governor John Kitzhaber's office. If we're really against racism in our progressive communities, then let's not just say that. Let's walk our talk, and let's pull the strings to really end the Jim Crow drug war and let our people go. Governor Kitzhaber, let our people go. Let our people go. The latest news from Ebola is that 357 people are being actively monitored in New York City. According to Boston.com, that's representing travelers from Ebola-afflicted countries as well as hospital staff who care for the latest Ebola patient, Dr. Craig Spencer at Bellevue Hospital. Dr. Spencer is still undergoing treatment, seems to be getting better, has been playing his guitar and that sort of thing. Boston.com also writes, someone he came into contact with while he was contagious has also been upgraded from being quarantined to being active monitoring, which means a health official will visit the patient and check his or her symptoms once a day. His or her travel is no longer restricted, according to a statement from New York City health officials. From BBC News, their title is, the UN lacks resources to fight the deadly virus, and BBC writes, the head of the UN mission charged with fighting Ebola in West Africa has told the BBC he does not yet have the resources necessary to defeat it. He said more help was urgently needed despite significant contributions from the UK, China, Cuba, and the US. And departing from that text, they're talking about $6 billion now, with a B, returning to the article, he was hopeful of achieving the target of 70% bed space for new cases and 70% safe burials by December. The confirmed death toll, according to BBC, and the confirmed toll is known to be much lower than the actual toll simply because of the conditions in the afflicted and affected countries. Maybe I'll make a portmanteau there. The afflicted countries? No, that won't work. World Health Organization says 4,800 and change are now dead. The numbers are down since the World Health Organization previously reported figures last Friday because it said it changed the way the figures are collated, but it said the countries worst affected by the outbreak, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, transmission remained persistent and widespread, particularly in the capital cities. And BBC writes, in other developments, West African heads of state are due to meet Thursday, today in Ghana, for a special meeting to review the regional response to the crisis. The International Finance Corporation, part of the World Bank, has announced an initiative to provide at least $450 million in commercial financing to enable trade, investment, and employment in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. And departing from that text, that is because they are being struck so hard by this phenomenon, this Ebola. BBC writes, Mr. Banbury was speaking at the UN headquarters for Ebola response in Ghana, which has not been affected by the epidemic. At the end of a regional tour, he told the BBC it was difficult to say if the spread of the disease is slowing, as it was a very mixed picture. In Liberia's capital, Monrovia, there was a decline, but there was significant acceleration elsewhere. The World Health Organization says that of the planned 4,700 beds in Ebola treatment centers, only 22% are operational, blaming delays on insufficient numbers of foreign medical teams. Once again, speaking for myself and departing from what BBC has written here, Cuba has come through in a big way, and the U.S. has not when it comes to actual doctors treating Ebola victims. Returning to the BBC text, the bed space issue is huge. That's quoting Mr. Banbury, but he said he hoped that by reducing the numbers of people becoming infected, the UN would eventually be able to reach its targets. He said his organization did not yet have the capacity to defeat the disease. Quoting Banbury, it's not here yet. There are still people, villages, towns, and areas that are not getting any type of help right now. We definitely don't have the response capability on the ground now from the international community, end quote. And you can find that, as I was saying, at BBC News. Now, quoting John Quealy on Common Dreams, with this year's election now over and lawmakers relieved of the pressure that coincides with daily interaction with constituents, President Obama on Wednesday announced that he would finally ask Congress to give him the approval he needs to continue and possibly expand his new multi-front war against the militant group known as ISIS, military operations that began over 3 months ago in Iraq and then expanded to Syria in September, have so far been conducted by authorities the Obama administration claims are contained in a pair of congressional military authorizations, the AUMFs that you hear about, signed during the Bush years and that followed the attacks of September 11, 2001. Legal experts say those claims are dubious, and others have pointed out that because the War Powers Act only allows the president to conduct overseas military operations without congressional approval for 60 days, Obama is in violation of those restrictions. Quoting President Obama. The idea is to right-size and update whatever authorization Congress provides to suit the current fight rather than previous fights. We now have a different type of enemy. The strategy is different. It makes sense for us to be, to make sure that the authorization reflects what we perceive to be not just our strategy over the next 2 or 3 months, but strategy going forward, end quote. On Wednesday, however, in a press conference at the White House following Tuesday's midterm elections, Obama said he was now prepared to seek the blessing of Congress for ongoing military action in Iraq and Syria, operations he has previously indicated could be long-term, lasting many months or years into the future. More on that in a moment. Continuing with the article to Jason Deitz at Anawar.com, the political timing of the president's announcement seemed plain enough. He writes, most of the major party leaders on both sides of the aisle were pretty straightforward about their opposition to voting on the ISIS war before the Tuesday election. President Obama was fine with it at the time, insisting he didn't need authorization now that the election's over. President Obama is changing his tune and pushing for the lame duck Congress to quickly rubber stamp the conflict before the new one takes office. However, with the incoming Congress far more hawkish and doubtless to push a far more aggressive scope of the war, the president seems hopeful he can get the formality of a congressional vote out of the way without them. Legally, such a vote should have happened long ago, with the War Powers Act allowing the president only a 60-day window to seek authorization from Congress. If it had been held before the vote, the unpopularity of the conflict might have scared some off of backing it. Now, with Congress outgoing and these returning to session years from having to face re-election, there's likely to be much more stomach for pushing through the quick vote and less serious debate. And I was saying that the U.S. imperial wars are evil, and it's nice to be able to get on KBOO and just say something that is absolutely a simple fact. The U.S. is if you want to count money, if you want to count bombs going off, if you want to count people dying, if you want to count occupations of countries, U.S. is the principal promulgator of evil in the world today. How about that? And I want to define what that's about, because the U.S. always says that it's defending itself, which is nonsense. I want to make a little metaphor if I can. Imagine that, let's just imagine for the sake of argument, that I didn't have three large dogs in my house. And if I didn't have the three large dogs, let's say I was living by myself. We'll further imagine, which is also not the case. And let's say someone came in and they wanted to steal, my China hutch. And they came into my house and surprised me, and I whacked them with my skillet. It's the first thing that comes to mind. It's sitting there on the stove. It's handy. It's heavy. Well, that's pretty violent, and that might not be the appropriate way of dealing with a robber, but most people would probably say, well, you know, it's the spur of the moment. You have the impulse for self-defense, whacked him with a skillet, serves him right, and there you go. I don't think people would be mad at me for doing that, even though I do hope that I have better self-control. Now, let's suppose that someone came in and stole my China hutch, and I didn't whack him. Or even if I did, let's say that I decided that I wanted to be, I wanted to have Teresa's security, just like national security. We've got national security. We're always talking about our little threats, blowing them up into these huge things. So I'll say, okay, I want Teresa's security. So damn it, someone came into my house and scared me and tried to steal something. So I'm going to burn down every house in a block radius. Then I'll be able to see real clearly and they won't be able to sneak up on me. Well, that would be evil. That's not self-defense. That's evil. And it's not that much of a stretch if you look at what U.S. imperial policy is. Oh my gosh. Allegedly, there was an attack on 9/11, and I do mean allegedly. But let's just, for the sake of argument, like Noam Chomsky does, let's just say that it really was, you know, a terrible terrorist attack and nothing more to it than that. That is no excuse for what the U.S. is doing. This nonsense with people getting their heads chopped off by ISIS does not justify the U.S. blowing people up, and boy, are we blowing people up. And as I was saying, more on that in a moment. The time is 9:14. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm going to change the topic just a bit because I want to get out some news items in addition to complaining about imperialism. Fight for the Future says, here's the plan. We need to send a strong message to President Obama and the FCC right now that the internet using public, that's me, That's you. That's how I get these stories. That the internet using public won't just roll over and let corporate fully owned Congress and President Obama take our rights away. So, taking some inspiration from mass protests in Hungary that just defeated an unfair internet tax there, we will gather after dark today at the White House and government buildings nationwide and hold up our glowing cell phones, laptops, tablets to shine light on the corruption unfolding in Washington, D.C. that threatens our most basic freedoms. So that's tonight here in Portland in front of the Portland City Hall, a vigil in Portland for the open internet. And man, you don't know how bad it's gonna hurt until I take it away. We are going to have to fight for this. So I want to tell you that this is happening tonight. If you were able to show up, that would be beautiful. It's tonight, 5:30 p.m. Our gathering in front of the Portland City Hall. That's at 1240 Southwest 4th Avenue, in case you haven't seen it. And bring your cell phone or flashlight or bring a lighter and light up a doobie now that you can, because we're all going to have our little lights together, and it's going to be a lit-up protest saying, do not take away our internet rights, because, you know, it's about free speech. And it's about one of the most powerful forms of free speech and one of the best organizing tools that has come around in quite a while. And the powers that be, read the corporations and the billionaires, really, 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 really want to take it away from you. Boy, do they. Tonight, 5:30, Portland City Hall, 4th Avenue. All right. And then Environmental News Service is saying that voters gave Republicans control of the Senate in the midterm elections with a majority of 52 seats to the Democrats, 48. The GOP also maintained control of the House of Representatives, making Congress entirely Republican. For the environment, this will mean fossil fuels such as coal and oil will receive congressional support, while renewable energy and environmental protections will be left behind. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, can you believe that spud ever gets elected to anything, but he's a Senate Republican leader from the coal-producing state of Kentucky. He's often railed against what he calls the burdensome regulations placed on Kentucky coal jobs by the Obama administration. That's what he said on the Senate floor September 17th. Notice how when Congress critters, as Jim Hightower calls them, get concerned about burdensome regulations placed on billionaires, and they start talking about jobs, because, you know, they really care about jobs. Oh yeah, yep, just all about jobs, and must be people with coal jobs who got them into office by contributing a dollar each. Of course not. He's concerned about the billionaires, calling President Barack Obama's policy a war on coal in the same speech. What's wrong with that? If we're going to have a war, why not have a war on coal? But anyway, McConnell took aim at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's rule to limit greenhouse gas emissions from coal-burning power plants, signaling the Republican direction when the new majority takes its seats in January. Quoting, Americans have seen a barrage of regulations and red tape from the president's Environmental Protection Agency strangling the coal industry. Yay! You know, he didn't say yay. He said, one of my home state's most important sources of jobs and economic development, Kentucky miners and thousands more from the Commonwealth whose jobs rely on mining are feeling the pain from the president's efforts. That's a quote of McConnell. He claimed that Obama's policies have, quote, contributed to a loss of 7,000 Kentucky jobs in that industry, because, you know, like I said, he cares about jobs, huh? Since 2009, he said, those of those who represent coal states have made numerous attempts to rein in the EPA, but Senate Majority Leader and fellow Democrats here in Washington have blocked us at every turn. Last September, I introduced the Saving Coal Jobs Act, said McConnell. The bill is another attempt to rein in the EPA's actions to curb heat-trapping greenhouse gas emissions. So it's going to be like that. And the article is basically making the point that these people like Senator Inhofe, who calls climate change a hoax, have now got majority power. So that's who we have to fight. And, well, like I was saying, we need more than a ballot box. So speaking of climate change, according to E&E News, and quoting San Jose Mercury News, rare changes in wind patterns this fall have caused the Pacific Ocean off California and the West Coast to warm to historic levels. That's going on right now. It's rainy and really rather warm for November, huh? But returning to the text, drawing in a bizarre menagerie of warm water species. The mysterious phenomena are surprising fishermen. El Nino isn't driving this year's warm water spike, nor is climate change. All year, in a way, scientists have been forecasting an El Nino, but now the water is only slightly warmer than normal at the equator, where they detect El Nino, so it's leading scientists to declare a mild El Nino is on the way. The ocean changes have affected, for example, birds. As ocean upwelling stalled in the summer, less krill and other food rose from the depths. As a result, several species of birds, including common murres, had high rates of egg failure on the Farallon Islands, 27 miles west of San Francisco. Jamie Janke, California current group director of Point Blue in Petaluma, said, quote, "The krill that is usually present disappeared, and the fish that some of these birds rely on disappeared. Up until July," he said, "we had an abundance of whales around the Farallons, mostly humpback whales and some blue whales. And when we went back in September, there was no krill, and the whales were nearly absent." Zeke Grader, executive director of the Pacific Federation of Fishermen's Associations in San Francisco, said, quote, "Our guys in Santa Barbara are saying there's almost nothing down there, just a lot of warm, clear water, a little bit of salmon, and not much else," end quote. Once again, jumping topics, perhaps you had heard of 43 students going missing in Mexico. According to Radio Havana Cuba, Mexican authorities Tuesday captured the fugitive former mayor, wanted for his role in the abduction of 43 students in September. The ex-mayor of Iguala in Mexico's southern state of Guerrero and his wife were captured in a pre-dawn raid on the house where they were staying in Mexico's populous working-class district of Iztapalapa. According to media reports, Radio Havana says federal police were tipped off to their location by two neighbors. At least three arrest warrants have been issued for him, Abarca is his name, for the crimes of homicide, attempted homicide, and abduction in connection to the 26th of September clash between students of a teacher's college and municipal police in Iguala with ties to a local criminal ring. The incident left six people dead, including three students, and the disappearance of 43 students, spotlighting the extent of corruption within the local government. The political fallout led to the mayor being stripped of his post and the governor of Guerrero stepping down. So that, as I was saying, is at Radio Havana, Cuba. There's more details on that if you're following that story. Now back to imperialism and war. Bill Van Auken, writing in WSWS.org, that stands for World Socialist, says, quote, "A revealing indication of the intense and protracted character of the war that U.S. imperialism is preparing in the Middle East was provided by the Washington Post well-connected national security correspondent Walter Pincus. The Defense Department is certainly preparing for a long fight," Pincus wrote, citing a recent notice to military contractors of department plans for, get this, an 8-year contract for the Air Combat Command of the U.S. Air Force set to begin in October 2016. Departing from the text, yeah, they told you it was going to be a long, drawn-out war. Yeah, that's the plan. And returning to what Bill Van Auken wrote in WSWS.org, "The contract is for operating and supporting the command's major war reserve material facilities in Oman, Qatar, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates. Among the items to be pre-positioned at these sites are mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicles, massive amounts of ammunition, and medical contingency hospitals for expeditionary medical support. The plan also calls for creating facilities and equipment that could house 3,300 airmen and 72 fighter aircraft at expeditionary locations," end quote. And, you know, there's already a hell of a lot of equipment out there. So, I guess they're just having a good time with their imperial war blowing up people without ever having to be called on it. Hello, peace movement. Hello, anti-war movements. Let's start existing. Because, you know, heck, anybody... I don't think that... Let's see, how shall I phrase this? Anyone think the war's not evil? It's evil. Let's stop it. In the meantime, the Pentagon Central Command announced Wednesday it had carried out 4 airstrikes in Syria and 10 in Iraq since Monday. A CENTCOM spokesman said the strikes had hit various ISIS vehicles, bunkers, and small units. Kind of makes you go to sleep already, doesn't it? You hear that sort of thing so often. But Bill Van Auken writes, "From Iraq itself, however, came a different account of the U.S. bombing runs. In Al-Qaim in western Anbar province near the Syrian border, security officials told the National Iraqi News Agency that a U.S. warplane fired 2 missiles into a popular market in the center of the city The explosions ripped through the crowded market, leaving at least 7 Iraqi civilians dead and 27 others wounded, many of them critically. Kaboom! Uncle Sam calling. Again from Radio Havana, Dateline Cairo, Palestine has asked the Egyptian government to reopen the Rafah border crossing, closed by Cairo following deadly attacks in the Sinai Peninsula. The Palestinian ambassador to Egypt asked Cairo on Tuesday to reopen the border crossing between Egypt and the Gaza Strip. Last month, Egyptian authorities sealed the crossing, Gaza's only land terminal that bypasses Israel after the October 24th attacks, targeting Egyptian military personnel, killed 33 Egyptian soldiers. And departing from the text, closing that crossing makes a hellish situation even incredibly worse. The slow genocide that is being applied to the Palestinian people is truly ugly to look at. Returning to Radio Havana, Cuba's text, the Palestinian envoy said he had asked the Egyptian foreign minister to reopen the crossing for special cases, such as enabling the return of the Palestinians who had received treatment abroad for injuries sustained in Israel's summer war on Gaza. The war killed about 2,140 Palestinians and left more than 11,000 others injured. And recently there was even more border crossing closing, and the excuse was a couple of piddly rockets that no one took claim for and which injured no one. Returning to Radio Havana, Cuba's text, Shabaki said Egypt promised to reopen the crossing after the army finished the operation against the militants behind the attack. The Israeli regime has also indefinitely shut down border crossings to the besieged Palestinian coastal territory. The Tel Aviv regime imposed a restriction on the Erez and Kerem Shalom crossings on Sunday until further notice, citing the alleged firing of a projectile. And I think the latest on that is that they've let some stuff through, including like a tiny little, just the tiniest imaginable shipment of concrete to rebuild with. But from News 24, the International Criminal Court will not investigate the 2010 raid by Israeli naval commando troops of the Turkish ship MV Mavi Marmara, in which an American peace volunteer and 9 other passengers were killed. One of them was critically injured during the incident and remained comatose until his death earlier this year. That's why you sometimes hear that it was 8 more rather than 9. But while the prosecutors involved in the case did find reasonable basis to believe that war crimes were committed during the takeover, they were not found to be of sufficient severity, that is, not a large enough number of deaths to fall under the court's jurisdiction. News 24 writes, neither Turkey nor Israel are members of the ICC. However, the vessel in question was registered to the Comoros Islands, which filed a complaint over the raid to the court. And departing from the text of News 24, the U.S. didn't complain at all. You want to kill Rachel Corey? You want to kill a U.S. citizen? Well, I guess that's okay, you know. They defiantly sought to give aid to persons oppressed by Israel. So they can be killed. You know, that's okay. U.S. is mellow about that. The MV Mavi Marmara, returning to the text, was part of a flotilla that attempted to break the Israeli naval blockade of the Gaza Strip, carrying aid to Palestinians, according to the Israeli Army's ridiculous official version. Turkish activists on board attacked the Israeli commandos with axes and metal rods, forcing them to return fire. Istanbul, as well as video made by the passengers of the Marmara, rather dispute that account. The incident has led to the downgrading of relations and severely strained ties between Israel and Turkey. But the U.S. did nothing about the death of its citizen. Looks like it's come down to the bottom of the hour, and so I'll wrap it up. But I want to tell you that there's an article by Bill McKibben, Bill McKibben, in The Guardian, that starts by saying, at this point, the scientists who run the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change must feel like it's time to trade their satellites, their carefully calibrated thermometers and spectrometers, their finely tuned computer models, all of them, for a thesaurus. Surely somewhere there must be words that will prompt the world's leaders to act. It's a good article, and I recommend that you read it. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for more of the incomparable Radio Zine. We're going out to you on 90.7 FM on our terrestrial transmitter, other frequencies elsewhere, and via the World Wide Web to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center. While cinema provides entertainment and escape, for many filmmakers and viewers, it is a vital portal into the lives of others, a medium of engagement, and a powerful tool for social action. Films will be shown from Thursday, October 6th through Wednesday, November 9th, and include the films Familia, Sing Your Song, An African Election, Windfall, and more. Again, that's Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center, located at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information about the films can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the Worldbeat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.